today on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
But the real question is this: are we ready to use MRD to guide actual treatment decisions in routine clinical practice? We all agree that MRD tells us something important about depth of response, but whether it should change what we do for patients outside of clinical trial is far less clear.
Today, Drs. Chang and Cohen joined the podcast to discuss minimal residual disease, MRD, in CLL, clinical utility, and practicality in this PureDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Andres Chang, Assistant Professor in the Department of Hematology and Medical Oncology at the Winship Cancer Institute of Emory University in Atlanta.
And I'm Dr. Jonathan Cohen, Professor in the Department of Hematology and Medical Oncology and Co-Director of the Lymphoma Program at Winship Cancer Institute, also of Emory University in Atlanta.
Thanks for joining me, Jonathan.
It's my pleasure to be here, Andres.
Over the last few years, MRD, or measurable residual disease, has become one of the most talked about concepts in CLL. It's a powerful diagnostic marker, essential to how we interpret modern trials, and it's increasingly part of our everyday vocabulary, even when we talk with our patients or with referring physicians. But the real question is this: are we ready to use MRD to guide actual treatment decisions in routine clinical practice? We all agree that MRD tells us something important about depth of response, but whether it should change what we do for patients outside of clinical trial is far less clear. So let's explore where MRD truly adds value today, where the evidence falls short, and how we're using or not using MRD when making real-world decisions for patients with CLL. So to begin, Jonathan, can you tell us or give us a brief overview about what MRD is and why it matters?
Sure. So I think before we talk about MRD, it's important to review how, in the past at least, we would assess whether somebody with CLL was responding to therapy. And so traditionally, response to therapy in CLL has been measured by a complete blood count, looking for normalization of the patient's lymphocytes, as well as recovery of any cytopenias, including anemia or thrombocytopenia. And in the past, a patient who required therapy for CLL, who went on treatment, and who had normalization of these values would be considered to have achieved a remission. And many of these patients would go on to experience many years of remission before noticing any changes in the blood counts. In more recent years, however, we've identified newer ways to assess for any evidence of residual disease. And this can be done through flow cytometry as well as next-generation sequencing. But really, the goal of MRD is to try to determine whether or not there is any residual disease that could be detected beyond what is detectable just through a routine laboratory. And as time has gone on, we've identified a number of different thresholds, ranging from 10 to the minus 4 to 10 to the minus 6, which have allowed us to identify even smaller amounts of residual disease. And so because of this, we've been able to employ minimal residual disease into the evaluation of patients, especially those on clinical trials. It has been repeatedly shown that patients who have undetectable MRD have an improved progression-free and overall survival across a number of different regimens, regardless of the type of regimen, and even among those patients, all of whom who achieve a CR. This has been particularly informative in patients who receive venetoclax-containing therapy in a fixed duration, where we've identified that completion of a fixed duration of therapy and achieving MRD negativity is particularly prognostic for progression-free survival. Now, having said all this, I think it's clear that a patient would rather be MRD negative than MRD positive. But there's a lot of nuance to this and a lot of areas where it's a little bit unclear with how, as far as how to apply it in clinical practice. So where do you find that MRD is particularly useful today in practice and where you recommend it for your patients as well as for referring physicians?
Yeah, thank you for this great overview about what MRD is. And I agree with you that there's still a lot to be learned about how we employed this test in order for us to either guide therapy or to counsel patients. I think that there are several areas in which the field has agreed that it is a very useful test to conduct. Mainly, one of these main areas is in clinical trials. We routinely are using it as one of the endpoints and try to compare the efficacy of one regimen versus another. And one of the great benefits of using MRD in clinical trials is that it offers us a very early readout of a potential benefit we will need a long time for us to get those same readouts. And so in clinical trials, absolutely, I would definitely recommend us getting that. And also, in many cases, for certain fixed duration therapies, particularly again with venetoclax-based regimens, it can reinforce the confidence in stopping therapy as planned, although the data there is a little bit more controversial because many of the trials that we have available right now do not actually employ MRD as a guide to therapy. And so we still need a little bit more to study in there. MRD can also be a good reassurance tool for patients, particularly those who are very anxious about their disease or those who have very aggressive disease. Having an undetectable MRD really gives patients a little bit more comfort at stopping therapies if they choose to use time-limited therapy regimen. And then hopefully in terms of clinical studies and to generate subsequent knowledge, we can one day use MRD as a way to re-stratify patients as well as to inform exactly how long patients are going to need to be on therapy in order to derive the maximum benefit. So with that said, I think that in the field now, particularly as we think about treatment in the community setting or outside of clinical trials, there's really a big debate about whether we should routinely test for MRD and whether MRD itself should change therapy. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, so I think that's the real million-dollar question here is how do you employ this, especially outside the setting of a clinical trial? And so there's a couple of different scenarios that we could think about that come up in routine clinical practice in which I would say we don't necessarily have a well-defined answer. So the first is a patient who's receiving fixed duration therapy, so perhaps venetoclax and obinutuzumab, who gets to the end of their treatment and is MRD positive. So let's assume for the sake of this discussion that the patient has achieved a complete remission based on our standard criteria, but an MRD assessment is done and they're still MRD positive. So what we know is that compared to a patient who is MRD negative, this patient is more likely to experience an early progression. What we don't necessarily know is what does that mean for the present time? So should therapy be extended? Do you continue, for example, the venetoclax until they achieve MRD negativity or until some other predefined time point? Do you switch regimens? Or instead of switching regimens, do you add an additional therapy to those regimens? Do you stop treatment and observe this patient, but perhaps observe them maybe a little bit more closely than you would somebody who is MRD negative? And the truth is, I think all of these are potentially reasonable approaches. And unfortunately, at least in the current day, we don't have an ironclad recommendation for what to do in this scenario. I think this is really where it is important to have a conversation with the patient, to think about how they've been tolerating therapy, what their thoughts are about discontinuing therapy versus continuing. One thing that, at least in my own mind, is always a little bit bothersome is that if somebody is MRD positive at the end of a predetermined course of therapy, is continuing that same therapy really going to result in them all of a sudden becoming MRD negative? And there are some studies that have suggested that perhaps a longer course of therapy may be beneficial in those scenarios, but I would say in clinical practice, we still don't necessarily know. So I have a conversation with those patients in that scenario, talk about the pros and cons of continuing therapy, of adding treatment, or of stopping, with the understanding that we can continue to monitor that patient and be prepared to intervene if and when we need to. Now, the other question is whether what you do for a patient who's on continuous BTK inhibitor therapy and becomes MRD negative. Now, I would first start by saying that we don't expect the same degree of MRD negativity in patients who are receiving BTK inhibitor monotherapy. And so I commonly am not checking it in that case, but if you had this information about a patient, I think it certainly would be tempting to stop therapy. I think the key thing, again, to keep in mind is that this is a very patient-specific decision. If a patient is tolerating therapy well and is not particularly motivated to come off treatment, I think it's totally appropriate to continue with therapy. On the other hand, a patient who is struggling with treatment, who might have required some dose reductions or otherwise is very excited to come off therapy, I think this could be at least one data point that you could use to help make that decision. Now, we've been talking about MRD as sort of a monolithic test, a positive versus negative, but the truth is that it's more nuanced than that. And so what are some of the challenges that you've seen with implementation in real-world practice?
Yeah, so I think that the field has really advanced significantly, both from a scientific side as well as in the clinical side of interpreting these tests. But one thing that we haven't quite achieved a consensus yet is what is the best test, really? You alluded to earlier that we have two different ways in which we can test for measurable residual disease. We have flow cytometry, we have next generation sequencing. We have different sensitivity thresholds, 10 to the minus 4 to 10 to the minus 6. But in addition to that, we also have, in the case of CLL, different sample sources. We can test it in the blood, and we can test it in the bone marrow. Different trials have tested it in different timing as well. And so with all this variability in terms of when to test, what to test, how to test, it really is still out for debate which one is really the best test and the best timing for this test. And so I think that it is up to our field and to us in the academic setting to really sort that question out before it actually becomes a routine clinical practice. Now, the other issue with MRD testing is access, right? We are fortunate to practice both in an academic center where we do have access both to next generation sequencing as well as high sensitivity flow cytometry. But even if we have access to that, the turnaround time can be slow. The cost is high, and we might face still some reimbursement issues. And in other settings, there might be also issues with expertise and issues with sample transportations and things like that. And so with all this in mind, even if you can get the test over time, you can see that if you keep testing it over time, there are issues in terms of consistency in which patients who are right at the border of the sensitivity threshold, we can see sometimes they might be quote-unquote positive, sometimes they might be negative. And over time, that kind of information can be quite challenging to really interpret and deliver a concise message to our patients. And so with that in mind, I think that there's still a lot to be learned with the use of MRD. And how we can really use it to the best of its potential in order to help our patient population. Now, Jonathan, I just talked a little bit about some of the considerations from a physician standpoint about MRD and when to test and what to test. What are some of the patient-centered considerations that you will say it will be important also to consider?
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing to think about as you're deciding when and whether to incorporate MRD assessment into the clinical care of your patients. We know that being MRD negative can be extremely reassuring. It can be associated with a long progression-free survival. But it's also important to recognize that if somebody is tested for MRD and they test positive, you now have a patient who was just told that you're in complete remission, that they've had a great response to therapy, but now they've had this higher risk marker that suggests that they may have an earlier recurrence. I think it's also important to recognize that just because somebody has a recurrence of their disease doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to have symptoms right away and doesn't mean that they necessarily need to have treatment right away. And so it's a little bit unclear whether knowing somebody is destined to recur earlier, having that information earlier, whether that really impacts that patient's overall treatment course. And so I think before you order the test, it's very important to have a conversation with a patient about what their disease status is. What are we going to do if this turns out to be positive? What are we going to do if this turns out to be negative? And whether or not this will impact the overall long-term expectations for that patient. And so I think one of the things that's very interesting and that's important to think about is for those patients that are MRD positive, does intensification actually improve outcomes? Or are we just adding toxicity for a patient that might have done just fine for many years without requiring therapy? And so this is where I think it really gets into some of the future directions in the as yet unanswered questions. And there are a number of trials ongoing looking at the use of MRD to guide the duration of therapy. I think this is particularly interesting because these could be actionable information that you could use to make treatment decisions. And there's also the opportunity to utilize MRD potentially in the future to de-escalate therapy or to identify those patients that may be able to receive a shorter course or a less intensive course of therapy. And so these are all things that I think still are unanswered, but an area of intense research and likely will become more clinically relevant in the real world over the coming years.
Well, Jonathan, that's about all the time that we have for this segment. I want to thank you for the great conversation and insights. MRD has clearly changed how we understand response in CLL. But for now, maybe it's better at guiding conversations than at guiding therapies. Hopefully one day we will be able to use it to guide therapies as well.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And as the data evolve, the challenge will be knowing when to use it, how to use this prognostic information, and especially it will be important once it becomes actionable. Thank you very much, Andres.
And thank you to our audience for watching.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PureDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PureDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PureDirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you can get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup or just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Chang and Cohen. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.